This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
So glad to have you back with us as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, and open innovation. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online and webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Exciting show today. We're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from someone a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program, and of course, at the end of the program, the listener comments and the voice of reason. Right now, though, to tell us about the lineup for today's show, here is Jack Bishop.
Once again, it's the Science News Radio Network. We are so pleased to have with us Dr. Chad Merkin, who is going to be one of the speakers coming up at PittCon. You've heard us talk about that for some time now. Dr. Merkin, thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you're the department of Chemistry and International Institute of Nanotechnology at Northwestern University in Chicago, correct?
That is correct.
Now, when we start talking about nanotechnology and all of the related things to it, I have always wanted to ask somebody who was active in the field and who was an authority in the field. We're talking about things that, for you scientists, that you guys understand, but I'm not always sure if the general public understands. So let's begin our time together with this question. If you could pick, say, three things that you want Mr. and Mrs. Average Citizen to know, what would they be about nanotechnology?
Well, one is it's a field that's going to change every aspect of their lives in terms of improving how we do current things that we can do, creating new ways of doing things that we can't do. And in the case of medicine, where I work, creating all sorts of new ways of tracking and treating many different types of debilitating diseases.
So we're getting down to the core of some of the problems that we folk face every day, particularly in the area of medicine, particularly in one of the aspects that you're going to be talking about in your talk, which is coming up during PittCon, which is going to be happening in Chicago, March 2nd through 6th. Now, you were telling me a little while ago, before we began this interview, that one of the things that you were going to be talking about was fab. Now, what do we mean by fab? What are we talking about here, Doctor?
Well, it's actually a very timely discussion because there's a lot of excitement about things called 3D printers now, right? This idea that you could have a tool that could take and duplicate something that you thought was important at the point of use, whether it is a bottle opener or a stent, for example, for use in the medical field. One of the things that we work on at Northwestern is not 3D printing, but the idea of taking printing capabilities that are used in the electronics field, so this idea of a fab that's used to make all of our integrated circuits, and to create a tool that allows any researcher to rapidly prototype at the point of use, to do effectively what you typically need a billion-dollar fab for at the point of use. And to do that, you have to have a tool that's low cost. You have to have a tool that can rapidly make structures on demand, change the pattern that you want to make, and to work across many length scales, including this very difficult to access nanometer length scale. And we've created one such tool.
Already?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be talking about that at the meeting, which is really exciting. A tool that basically uses an architecture of mini pyramids. Think of it as a one big stamp of millions of pyramids that are opaque except for the fact that at the tips they have tiny little apertures, little holes.
All right, I'm following you so far.
Okay, and so think of a bunch of pyramids, and if they're all pointing towards the surface, we can drive things through those tiny little apertures. And those apertures can be very, very tiny. They can be just a couple of nanometers in diameter. And are you familiar with what's called a digital micromirror device?
Vaguely, but let's assume that I'm like the average person out there listening to us, and I'm not familiar.
Well, I'll tell you where you may be familiar with it. A lot of projection theaters use these devices. They were invented by Texas Instruments. And what they do is they use tiny little micromirrors, and they take one beam of light, and they can split it up into thousands of beams of light. And that allows you then to create images on surfaces. So if you're talking about a projection TV, it allows you to create an image that you watch. What we do is we take those devices and take one beam of light, we split it up into thousands of beams of light, and then we channel each of those beams down these tiny little pyramids. And we squeeze the light through this tiny little aperture at the end of the pyramid, and we use that then to develop a pattern on a surface using chemistry, where if we put down materials that are photosensitive, sensitive to light, we can control where the chemistry is occurring and therefore create the chemical pattern that's generated.
Now, we'd explain it that way, even I can understand it. And
well, then it's really easy. So basically what happens is each pyramid is responsible for patterning a 100 by 100 micron area. So that's a tenth of a millimeter by a tenth of a millimeter. So a very tiny area. But you stitch all those fields together because you have millions of pens working in concert, and now you can pattern a very large area with tremendous precision and with the ability to make nanometer scale features, micrometer, millimeter scale features, and features that you and I could even see. And that's really powerful because that's what's required then to effectively do what I talked about at the beginning of the interview, which was how do I take an integrated circuit, which has lots of tiny little features, but also features that are addressable to the macroscopic world. So they scale up to larger and larger features that allow us to run them. I can do that on demand using this type of device. And we think it's going to be revolutionary, first of all, in terms of research, allowing researchers to rapidly prototype different types of tools that would ordinarily take thousands of dollars, sometimes millions of dollars to make at a remote location to do at the point of use, but also open up the ability to move these types of printing techniques away from the electronics industry to the life sciences, where people are very interested in, for example, making patterned arrays of DNA and proteins to screen for different types of drug candidates, to understand lots of important issues in biology. This is going to revolutionize those types of capabilities.
Now, we want to remind you that we are spending some time today talking with Dr. Chad Merkin. He's going to be one of the speakers coming up at PidCon. PidCon is coming up, by the way, March 2nd through 6th. And if you register online before February 10th, you get a $150 discount on your registration. Doctor, this nano world that I'm beginning to learn a little bit about, thanks to people like you and other good folks that we have spent some time talking with in the last few months about PidCon, which is coming up, it is really, in my mind, a brave new frontier. How long have we been talking about this kind of nanotechnology? Now, I can remember years ago watching Star Trek, and they were talking about it and thinking it was somewhere in the distant future. But as I look at 2014, it's right around the corner.
It is. I'll tell you, it's kind of an interesting field in that regard. It got its birth in part in the science fiction literature, right? You have Isaac Asimov's Fantastic Voyage. Of course, you mentioned Star Trek. Hollywood's been talking about nanotechnology for quite some time. But talking about it and actually doing it are two different things. And some of the things that were discussed will never happen because they defy laws of science in certain cases, and other things will happen. And so that's one of the challenges as a scientist, really looking at what are the credible aspects of nanotech, what can we do today, what are we likely to be able to do over the next decade, what may not happen for 100 years, what may not happen at all. And that's an important set of parameters to look at. The modern age of nanotechnology started with the invention of analytical tools that allowed you to move and manipulate atoms for the first time. Things like the scanning tunneling microscope 25 years ago. Those tools now have become commonplace, and in fact, they're sold at PitCon. You can have an instrument that allows you to not only look at, but to move atoms in your lab, and many researchers do have them, and use that to drive the field and to explore some of the consequences of miniaturization. The National Nanotechnology Initiative was implemented about 13 years ago by the Clinton administration. I would say that's what really drove ultimately the development of this field, because it involved an enormous investment, about $1 billion a year in terms of government funding. And began to galvanize science and to get people to rally around the theme of asking the fundamental questions of how are things different when I miniaturize them. And one of the neat things about nanotechnology is everything is different when you miniaturize it.
Everything.
No matter what it is, if you take a structure, that is one of the tenets of nanotechnology, if you take a structure and minimize it in terms of size, it will have different properties. And so a lot of the science is figuring out what those different properties are. And the technology or engineering is saying, okay, now I have a material that has a new property. How do I create a new capability from that, a new technological capability? And that's why the first tool that I told you about is so important, because it's a tool that allows you to fabricate tiny little structures made of almost anything and explore their properties, to explore their potential uses, and to create a lot of technologies that can evolve from those capabilities.
Now, you said before we got started that one of the areas that you are particularly focusing on is in the area of medicine. And as somebody who's had his share of medical issues over the last few years, the idea of using nanotechnology to make me healthy again just really perked up my imagination. And so you mentioned using nanotechnology as far as cancer and cancer treatment. What are some of the areas that we are beginning to look at in that arena?
Oh, there are a lot of exciting advances. So one of the biggest challenges in terms of developing therapeutics are not just developing ways of treating the disease, but getting the therapeutic to the point of the disease. And it turns out that when you take sometimes even existing drugs and repackage them in a nanoscale format, they can have biodistribution properties that are completely different from the original drug.
Oh, really?
Abraxane is an example of that, a breast cancer drug. It's a nanoscale formulation of an existing drug. When made in tiny particle form, it's 42% more effective.
Now, that's a dramatic increase in effectiveness.
Absolutely. And I'll give you another example. We've invented a structure we call a spherical nucleic acid. So everybody knows the structure of DNA.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not in science, it's a beautiful double helix, right? Think of it as a big tubular structure, but
right.
it's a double helix, two strands coming together.
So what's happening in that arena with nanotechnology?
One of the things that we've invented and discovered here is that you can take DNA or RNA, and you can take a tiny particle, and you can package the DNA on the surface of the particle to create a spherical, a little globule
All right.
of DNA or RNA. And when you do that, that structure has properties that are completely different from the original DNA or RNA construct that you started with.
All right.
One of the things that's different about it is it can naturally enter cells. So skin
oh,
cells,
really?
For example.
Oh,
absolutely. So you can get large amounts of nucleic acid, DNA or RNA payload, into a cell. And so what are we doing with that? Well, we're doing lots of things. One is we're creating ways of going in and flipping genetic switches associated with disease. So take, for example, in the case of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new drug candidate for glioblastoma, brain cancer.
Really?
And what these constructs do is you can inject them into animals. They have the ability to circulate through the animal and cross what's called the blood-brain barrier. Most drugs won't do that. It turns out spherical nucleic acids will. Once inside the brain, they can partition into disease cells, and you can design them to go in and flip genetic switches that are unique to those disease cells that cause the cells to die. And so we have data that show that you can take animals that have very aggressive brain tumors and you can treat them with these constructs, and you can get localization in the tumors, and you can get selective cell death, reduction in tumor growth, and significantly increased animal survival. And so that is laying the foundation for a drug that we hope to take into humans later this year. And that's extremely exciting because that's one of the most aggressive diseases out there. There's almost no hope for folks that have or that are diagnosed with glioblastoma. Most of them are going to die within 12 to 15 months. And if we can prove that in humans these constructs also go to the brain, we're off to the races in terms of developing not just therapeutics for things like brain cancer, but all sorts of brain diseases, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, any neurodegenerative disease that has a genetic basis, and there are a lot of them, Huntington's disease, for example. So we're extremely excited about this. They also will go through the skin. So you can take them and put them in creams, and you can put them on skin. Normally, drugs don't penetrate the skin so well. Nucleic acids won't at all. Spherical nucleic acids will. So you can begin to go after diseases like melanoma, psoriasis, local injections for things like rheumatoid arthritis. Lots of new types of therapies are going to come out of this new form of DNA, this little globule of DNA that is enabled by advances in nanotechnology.
Well, you're certainly talking about areas of importance to many of us on a day-to-day basis. If anybody out there like myself who's had family members who have had some of these conditions or have them themselves, you know, you're talking about hope for a lot of people.
That's exactly right. I mean, look, this is a field called gene regulation. So we didn't invent the field of gene regulation. That's existed for quite some time. And when that field was developed, it created a tremendous amount of hope for lots of people because, in principle, you can go after and treat any disease with a genetic basis.
Now,
practice, though, the challenge is not just this concept of regulating genes, but it's that coupled with the ability to get the regulating construct, in this case the globule of DNA or RNA, to the point of the disease. And the fact that these things can cross the blood-brain barrier allows you to now think about creating real viable therapeutics for the brain. The fact that they can go across skin barriers allows you to create new types of therapies in principle for different diseases of the skin. Conventional types of nucleic acids, DNA and RNA, won't do this. And so that's an example of where nanotechnology begins to solve or create at least a potential solution for some very major problems that limit the development of useful therapeutics.
Now, Doctor, I hadn't planned on asking you this question, but what you said a few moments ago led me to it. Can the kind of developments that you are working on and that your peers are working on, could this lead to the prevention of some of these conditions? Could we actually get down to the cellular level and the level of saying we will correct this genetic abnormality that you may fall prey to?
Well, in certain cases, yes. I mean, in some cases, they will be cures. In other cases, they will be treatments. So something that you have to use repeatedly to maintain a healthy state. And in other cases, they will be preventative.
Now, you're going to be talking about all of this and more, I know, at PidCon coming up March 2nd through 6th. And by the way, PidCon is organized by the Pittsburgh Conference on Analytical Chemistry and Applied Spectroscopy. Hope I said it right that time. And this field sounds to me to be so new and so exciting. I've got to ask you this question. How did you get interested in this?
Well, I got interested really almost at the start of my career. So I was at the right place at the right time. We talked earlier about the invention of these analytical tools that allowed you to look at atoms and manipulate them on surfaces. When I was starting my academic career, meaning my independent one as a professor at Northwestern, those tools were just becoming commercially available. So they'd been transitioned from the labs of IBM to companies that were producing them and selling them at a price that would be expensive from a layperson standpoint, but from a research standpoint, very reasonable.
So it seemed organic almost for you to fall into that area.
Well, we had bought some of those tools at Northwestern, just as kind of service tools for the whole community. And I said, you know, I want to go learn how to use these. And I began getting more and more interested in them, and not just in using them for imaging, but to use them to fabricate things. And one thing led to another, and pretty soon we became one of the leading efforts in nanoscience and nanotechnology in the country. We now have, I think, the largest effort in the country at Northwestern with this International Institute for Nanotechnology.
Well, we're just about out of time. I've had the pleasure, and I do mean that sincerely, of talking to Professor Chad A. Merkin of the Department of Chemistry and International Institute for Nanotechnology at Northwestern University in Chicago. He's going to be one of the speakers at PITCOM coming up March 2nd through 6th. Don't forget, if you get your registration done online at www.pitcom.org, do that before February 10th, and you'll get a $150 discount. Doctor, we appreciate you being with us here on the Science News Network.
Pleasure's been all mine. Thank you very much.
Okay. As we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Andrew Carnegie. In this world, we must learn not to lay up our treasures, but enjoy them day by day. As we travel the path we never return to.